Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Now, the Gauteng MEC of Agriculture and Rural Development, in an opinion piece in the Mail and Guardian, reflected on something that we know, but somehow it's easier sometimes not to talk about, is that 9,340,000 people in South Africa went hungry in 2023. This is a stat that I think many of us have seen before. In fact, we've reflected on stats before 2023 numbers. But it's comfortable for us not to think about it. On the line with us is the MEC of Agriculture and Rural Development, Vuyiso Ramakgopa. Thank you so much for bringing this back again on the table. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela, and good evening to the listeners.
You know, we often talk about this issue when we have a conversation around stunting, when we talk about zero-rated foods. We now know that there is a proposal on the table to broaden that basket. But in reality, with all the work that NPOs are doing to try and help with stunting and the fact that there are some goods currently that are zero rated, there isn't a shift in the needle. Tell me why you think that is.
Yeah, good evening, Pamela, again. And I think you've hit the nail on the head in your questioning, in that why are we not shifting the needle? And more plainly, what's it going to take to resolve this problem once and for all? The issue that we are referring to, and it's important to state it, is often referred to as food insecurity. But to really zone in on it, you know, we're talking about urban hunger. Mm. And we're talking about hunger broadly. Mm. And it is experienced, like you've said, by millions of South Africans. One in four residents of Gauteng are not guaranteed a meal a day. And that's really the core of what we are solving for. So we are solving for how do we ensure that the average South African, that all 62 million South Africans can at some point be guaranteed at least a meal a day, but preferably, you know, whatever their nutritional requirements are. And that's going to take looking at three key elements, really. Mm. It's affordability on the one aspect. So ensuring that that people can actually afford to buy food. Mm. And we know that's a huge issue with the rising unemployment rates, and particularly the high unemployment in urban areas. Mm. And then number two, it's about accessibility. So how do you make sure that even where there is food, that it is accessible to those people who need it the most? Mm. And in my piece, my article that you referenced, I speak about the 10 million tons of food that is wasted every year, ending up in landfills instead of actually being made accessible to the people who need it the most.
Go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, and then the last part is really just looking at the systems and the economy of food and saying, how do we ensure that we build food systems that are more resilient, more responsive to the needs, and that people can actually grow food closer to where they are, whether it's in their homes or in their communities, and feed themselves. So it's really about self-sufficiency as well.
It's also about how we as a nation collectively, really all of us, have to start thinking about the policies that make sense for our need in this way. We all know that with the current economy and the structure of this economy, if you said to those who trade in food, that the food that is not, I'll call aesthetically perfect, not that the fact that there's a problem with the food, but aesthetically perfect. In other words, I grew up at a time when fruit sometimes had an additional twin on the side or whatever. There's something weird and, you know, all kinds of wonderful things. I don't remember seeing anything like that anytime in the recent times. And we all know that when it comes to the economy, there just would not be room for that, because currently, if you are going to give away that kind of food, they'd say, well, I mean, you're killing our market. But perhaps there's a way in which we can say, if I go to a store and I could have the right to choose that I want picture perfect apples or oranges or whatever the case may be, and perhaps the ones that look like they are a little bit interesting, I could maybe buy at a discounted rate. There must be room for that, so that we all have the choice rather than the distributor deciding for all of us that if it's not perfect, you cannot have access, and that's the end of that.
Absolutely. I think that is a really interesting proposal. And it's coupled, actually, with, even if you take it a step further, because not all of it is choice related.
Yeah.
Not all of it is just aesthetic. A lot of it is also regulatory.
Mm.
So, you know, in terms of food regulations and food standards, often food that is still perfectly healthy and edible, unfortunately, cannot be sold because it may or may not adhere to one or other, standard.
Yeah.
And so ensuring that we match supply and demand is really the key thing here. And there are organizations that are doing great work to try and resolve this, but it can't just be left up to them alone, you know. We have to actually have a much more coordinated policy approach, and legislation perhaps must also come to the party to ensure that that burden of resolving this problem is shared. I mean, you spoke about the market and the role of the market and kind of how we as consumers drive the market in many ways. But as we know, basic economics, the market itself is not perfect.
Absolutely.
And this is where the role of government becomes very important in ensuring that we rectify some of those market inefficiencies where they may exist. And this is one massive one.
We're also going to have to do the entire 360 view on all of this, even things like fashionable foods and that kind of thing, where you would find at a particular time there would be one particular kind of food that is more accessible because it's now more fashionable, right? And other foods just are not sourced because this is not the season. And yet maybe they are actually growing easily in our region. So those food politics would have to be reviewed to meet the need more than the, I suppose, the trend at the time.
Yes, I like the term that you use there, food politics.
Mm.
Because food is very political
in
that it is a reflection of a society, of its culture, of its heritage, of its values. And we are shaped very much by the food that we eat. You know, the old adage that says, you are what you eat.
Mm.
We really are. And if you look at the statistics in South Africa right now, South Africans actually suffer from very high levels of obesity, which seems counterintuitive because you say, all right, we've got food scarcity or food insecurity, but yet we've got obesity. And what people miss often is that obesity in itself is also a sign of poor nutrition and poor diets.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of work to do in terms of, one, ensuring that people actually can afford to buy food,
mm-hmm.
because that's the core. We have to solve for the baseline.
Mm.
Can people actually afford and access food on a daily basis? That's number one. But number two is exactly what you're raising and saying, is the food that they're able to access actually suitable and nutritious? And is it the right food for their bodies and their needs? And that's the next level. And that's why that's why I'm so vocal about driving localized urban farming and small-scale agriculture, because it is in those investing in small-scale farmers that you can actually start to have broader conversations about, you know, different crops, different product lines, catering to local indigenous tastes.
Yeah.
And being actually responsive to that local market. And we have to get there. And also, of course, it goes without saying, one of the key contributors to hunger and urban hunger is unemployment and lack of economic opportunities. And so agriculture and microagriculture in particular becomes an avenue to actually catalyze a lot of these local economies in our peri-urban areas and township areas. And so there's a lot of, you know, interlinkages between the food crisis, our, you know, economic conditions and the economic state that we find ourselves in, and many other social ills. Crime is a big element.
Mm.
What we don't recognize is, in fact, a lot of crime is poverty-related, hunger-related.
Yeah.
People steal for food.
Yeah.
You know, and we must address these issues.
You make the point that yes, Gauteng is very urban, but we also have land in pockets and spaces. Now, Johannesburg didn't get the wonderful reputation of being, I think, the most man-made forest in the world type reputation for nothing. So it's very green, except yeah. I often wonder about the vegetation itself, most of it alien, and some of it not really useful. I always marvel at a time when, you know how sometimes you find this mulberry tree right in the middle of nowhere and you see people just picking it and just standing there for a few minutes. It's for me the best thing ever. And I wonder how intentional we can be in making sure that strategic planting of foods in spaces that are very, not only just open, but public, could assist in how we maybe go in some way dealing with hunger.
You're 100% right. One of the programs that we ran at the very beginning of this year was a school program where we identified 200, schools where we would plant 200 trees, but specifically fruit trees.
Yes.
In schools in generally under-resourced areas all over Gauteng.
Yeah.
Now, of course, this in itself is not going to solve the food crisis, of course.
Yeah.
But what it does is it starts to really conscientize people about, and not just people, children, young children, about where food comes from, how to protect and look after their environment. You know, we don't want to breed another generation of people that see trees only as we must see the connection between our environment and our immediate needs. And so it's really important in an urban context, especially for us to run these types of programs. We have been planting food gardens, planting trees, as I said, but it has to then also go a step further. And I think that's the key takeout, is saying it's not enough to just plant food gardens in people's backyards. We have to deal with the systemic issues. Because Gauteng, fortunately, is one of the provinces that attracts many people.
Yeah.
And for every year, you know, we've got millions more people flocking into the province. Mm. We have to be able to deal with the issues of how we feed them on a continuous basis.
Now, ending hunger is one of the issues that Rise Mzansi has been really vocal about for some time now. Now, I'm just now wondering, my own wish is that could we find ourselves pushing for some sort of legislation, perhaps, for instance, where at particularly primary school level, ECD levels, where we insist that if there's a hawker or any vendor in the premises of the school, it can only be healthy, healthy, locally grown foods, rather than the things that we've been hearing are harming our children and are sometimes laced on all sorts of unfortunate things. Could we maybe push for that, where children get accustomed to eating healthy food, especially if we've made it accessible to hawkers, where a fruit is a common, a snack, not necessarily these other things that we're finding ourselves dealing with right now?
No, absolutely. And you've correctly said, I mean, hunger and ending hunger is one of Rise Mzansi's core policy priorities. We've been very vocal about that for some time. And we're exploring different options in terms of legislative options, potentially, like you've said, looking at the avenue of potentially sponsoring a private member's bill. We're looking at it from a number of different angles. One of the things, for example, that we are really quite wanting to stress is the issue of food waste, like I said.
Yeah.
There are a number of international cases that we can reference wherein legislation has actually successfully been passed that compels food producers in the value chain to ensure that they, cost in the distribution of the food that they are producing. So, for example, when they overproduce, they cannot just dump it in landfills. They have to be part of the solution to get it to the communities where it needs to be. And these are solutions that we are looking at. you know, other avenues that one must consider is even around the various social support packages that are available in a South African context. Now, of course, we know we're dealing with a very constrained fiscus, but maybe there is a conversation to be had about what is the suite of social support that we offer? Why is it that we do not offer any direct subsidization of food, like many other developed countries, like your, you know, USA and other European countries that subsidize food directly, so that a person can walk into any supermarket, any store, and purchase food off the shelf directly with a voucher or you know, a digital voucher or some touch, that enables them to actually feed themselves at a baseline. And I think it's time for us to now open up these conversations at a national level and explore the options and address the crisis, because the crisis isn't going anywhere.
There's a lot to talk about there. Thank you. Thank you for bringing this up again. Gauteng MEC for Agriculture and Rural Development, MEC Vuyiso Ramakgopa. The article is in the Mail and Guardian if you haven't seen it. What we'll do also, we will also post it. But really, really something to think about. It cannot be that 9,340,000 South Africans in 2023 went to bed hungry. I'm sure the numbers keep rising because we are, you know, we are aware of the fact that people are unemployed and so on. But when you think about personally in your own life, how much food are you throwing away? You know, when you do have excess food, do you know where to take it? Do you know how to distribute it? How easy is it for you to be generous with the food? All of that. Legally, what's permissible if you're running a restaurant? If you have leftover food, do you know what's possible? And I know a lot of the people in the hospitality industry are afraid to give away food because, you know, they are afraid that there will be litigation in case somebody gets sick and so on. But we need to confront these issues and talk about how are we going to make sure that South Africans, less and less South Africans, are going to bed hungry, because unfortunately, if we have more people going to bed hungry, I can bet you now it will come creeping into your home very, very soon.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.